Hello, welcome to Time Out at What Next, a project brought to you by Rethinking Planning or Planung Neudenken, an initiative from the Chair of Planning Theory and Urban Development. We welcome you from the Faculty of Architecture at RWTH Aachen University. My name is Robin Chang, and I am a Canadian researcher, educator, and practitioner based in Germany. I am joined by my partner in crime, Manila De Julis.
Hi everyone, my name is Manila De Julis. I am an architect, I am an urban planner and a researcher. I am Italian based in the Netherlands, and I am so excited to join Robin in this wonderful project.
Time Out is a project inviting listeners and our guests to pause and think about time and its value for us as individuals and collectives. Whether you are rushing somewhere, planning your day, or taking a break and listening to this podcast, there are qualities and aspects to think about when we relate to time and how it is captured or reflected in design and structure for our lives and society. We hope you enjoy the various speakers and topics we have curated for you at Time Out, and look forward to hearing from our guests and our listeners. So thank you to Saskia van Steyn for joining us today on our first and inaugural episode for Time Out at What Next. My name is Robin Chang, and I am a postdoc scholar at the Chair for Planning Theory and Urban Development at the Faculty of Architecture in RWTH Aachen University. And I have with me today Manila De Julis as well, who is also a practitioner and researcher who has worked with the topics of time and temporality since her PhD back in the UK at Salford University. She brings experiences in public administration and planning in the Italian context, as well as in industry in the German and Dutch context. Whereas I come from Canada originally, so I have practical experiences in Canadian planning, but have also more recently through my research been looking at time and temporality. So today we have Saskia van Steyn with us today, and I'm really excited to be able to include her and introduce her. I know that Saskia, you probably will be able to say a few words about yourself, but you have most recently, or at least last year, for the International Architectural Biennale in Rotterdam, put together a fantastic program. In fact, I have even still the pamphlet here for the exhibit. Actually, this is upside down. It's about time. So we're really excited to be able to learn about you as a person, but also the thinking and the creative energy that you, as well as other colleagues and thinkers, put into this exhibit, and how this can actually give us reason to have a time out in our busy lives, but also in the philosophies of how we want to live and actually, yeah, walk the talk of being sustainable or contributing to livable and healthy communities globally. So I'm going to ask, put you on the spot, if you don't mind just saying a few words about yourself, your background, and where you're at now today.
Fabulous. Thank you so much for the invitation, first of all. Very nice to meet you. I just came back from holiday, so time somehow is sticky or even liquid in my reality. I hope to find the right words, because I somehow feel that I'm grasping with words, being in a void of sort of thinking about my near future for the last 3 weeks. That said, my past, I was picked up by Mr. Aaron Betsky back in 2001 while organizing debates in the city of Rotterdam, where I'm currently residing, also where the office of the International Architecture Biennial's office is on the periphery, literally located on the threshold between harbor and city. But back in the day, I was organizing Archi cases, yes. So on the social, political topics and how architecture should or could have a certain kind of agency. And he literally said, "You seem to have quite an opinion, come and curate a show." And I stayed 9 years. So my first steps were in the Netherlands Architecture Institute, now New Institute, after which I started up in Maastricht, very close to Aachen, Bureau Europa, with a micro budget, trying to look into what European identity could mean, both for the built environment as well as a sort of humanitarian position. I was then asked to start as head of one of the masters at the Design Academy, which is entitled Critical Inquiry Lab, where we aim to center stage research-driven design as a practice. So it's not an object, but literally the research that would result to either the what or the how in forwarding current, well, I would nearly say societal crises, but we'll get to that maybe later on. Headhunted for this marvelous function about 10 years. Yeah, about 1.5 years ago. So I really had a crash course in jumping in, rewriting the policy plan for the International Architecture Biennale, which was celebrating its 20th edition. Maybe sort of situating very shortly the Biennale itself, sprouted out of the ambition in 2002 by Christine Feierreis, now director of AEDES in Berlin, to have a vehicle to get international perspectives into the Dutch cultural landscape. So she first initiated the Dutch Pavilion, or was actively programming that in the Venice Biennial, and this was the vehicle to get those international voices back in. Now, fast forward, obviously the cultural landscape has changed. The Dutch cultural landscape has drastically changed. We might come to speak about that because I feel that we are actually trying to formulate an answer after the Super Dutch glorifying years. Happy people in the field. And as I was, maybe just to sort of very briefly, I'm in juries and committees, and I'm one of those people that also moderates as a hobby because it's my way of thinking out loud. I'll keep it at that because we have a lot to share or speak about. I'll wait for the first and second question.
Thank you so much for that introduction. Yeah, it definitely sets a good tone and canvas to understand where you come from, the experiences and the insights. And also, it clarifies a little bit the reasons for why you were headhunted for, you know, the position at DABR, and how you've taken a different tack to it. I do find it very opportune that and timely that for the 20th anniversary, that the exhibit that was put together, It's About Time, I found, so I did attend last year. I'm outing myself as a participant and someone who has gone through that embodied and cerebral experience of trying to explore and experience what time and temporally meant in that exhibit. And I did find myself that it was both at once a kind of internal orientation to reflect on what types of actions people could do, perhaps in some way a projection of this Dutch reorientation, looking back at the glorified years of design and architectural kind of philosophies. But at the same time, it was also a bit of a call to arms too. And I did notice that the impulse, you guys drew on history. So you drew on the impulse of the 1972 publication, The Limits to Growth by the Club of Rome, but that you guys also had a very explicit and very much emphasized a hopeful perspective about how action and interaction could inform an architecture for change. So we've prepared a couple of questions to try to jump into your mind and thinking about time and temporality and how that relates to your work and practice and pedagogy, as we've learned now. So we'll start with the first one. So time, and specifically, in my opinion, speed, there was a sense of urgency, this action or interaction in the moment of today. It was something that you as well as your team problematized through the program. So we're curious about that thought process that went into trying to shape and craft that experience, time with temporalities, and perhaps maybe if I can nudge a little bit, that kind of accelerated or urgent sense of how we deal with time and temporalities. So how was that for your directional as well as curatorial team? Like, what were the types of conversations that went into, you know, striking up that type of energy?
Thank you. Yes. So maybe just to sort of emphasize how the structure of the biennial works, so people have a bit of a feel. Obviously, it's a 2-year program, and we center stage a quite bombastic, monumental word, for instance, water, which was done by Westacht, Adrian Geuze, or power, which was done by Martin Heyer, who's a sociologist at the Utrecht University. So just to say that these words, to sort of capture the theme. That was quite random, but we used 2 years to build up to it. And this was in fact compressed to 9 months. Yet I was already confronted to the appointment of Mr. Dirk Lorbach, who is a scientist, and he is specialized in transitions. That would be the science underpinning change, one could say. That comes with a deep understanding of history and a projection, one could say, into the near future with then using backcasting strategies in order to see or understand where the future will take us. You know, you have this, the probable, the possible, the desirable futures. You have all these strategies. And my first conversations, well, first of all, I was met with him, so I had to deal with him. There were two scenarios, either fire or sort of bend things, which is a bit more my method. So I bended, let's say, the main theory that he is known for is called the X-curve. So what is in decline and what is on the rise in terms of really large systemic changes that are manifesting. And these changes, obviously, they come with planetary realities, with economic realities, but they also come with a social and cultural change. And it dawned on me to a certain extent that his transition theories and the X-curve had to do with that threshold of change and our fear for this change, or the lack of political will around the changes that we see on the horizon. Obviously, I haven't said the word climate change yet, but due to and under pressure of the climate realities. And I've never, it's actually interesting that you put the word speed out there, because I use words such as temporality and acceleration. So I'd have to really reflect on speed, but because to me, it actually also looks back at, but you're the academic on the word. So maybe I won't venture into that, but the Futuristo speed manifestation, all of that manifesto, excuse me. So dealing a lot with industrialization and upping the game. But back to your question, I thought it would be interesting to propose a decentralized model, because I think the future will be decentralized, oriented towards, let's say, technological and social will have to re-meet in a more profound manner. But I proposed somebody from the practice, and I wanted to really start with the land, literally. So I thought I invite a landscape architect who brings that knowledge in. So that was Peter Veenstra. And then I was reflecting if cultural institutions, knowledge institutions as the one I've come to run, are in fact not part of the problem. I was questioning this idea of newness in relation to speed also, or the eagerness for newness in relationship to the growth paradigm. This is why I thought, let's bring in architecture history. So just to sort of explain the thinking behind the team. So this is where Veronique Pateo and Léa-Catherine Schatzka play a role. So with them, we started off this question on which changes are manifesting within the practice of the architecture discipline. And these conversations really looked at trying to understand the role, one could say, of the architectural practice in relation to the current climate crisis, and if which kind of attitude and temporalities would have to come into the design practice in order to truly come up with a more sustainable way of understanding the practice. Did I answer every question? Probably not. Then it dawned on us that Club of Rome, in fact, was, and for those, you introduced it already very briefly, but they came up with the first, let's say, technological models, what one could think of scenarios, which is very close to the thinking of Professor Dr. Lorbach. These 11 scenarios that they investigated, I have now forgotten the parameters, but I can send them over in a second. It was pollution, population, food, well, the sort of a few of these fundamental parameters to investigate where will we be in 2072. We're halfway, And how are we doing in relation to their prognosis, one could say, although they actually rejected the word prognosis, but I want to get into the nitty-gritty. And the if we do not do anything for dummies scenario is what we're living today. So what we aimed with the exhibition was a backdrop of 100 years of policy making, of experimentation in the field, architectural material, bottom-up building. We'll get probably into the exhibition in a greater detail, was in fact to investigate, where are we? Is it all gloom and doom? Because we are wanting to debunk a little bit this, I would say it's a political choice to harvest on the fear for the systemic changes we are in fact confronted with, in order to prevent, or one could have a vision, one could have a direction which is much more hopeful. And what we aimed with these, if I recall correctly, 75 projects, over 170 films and books, and we aimed to create a landscape of possibilities. And these were drawn out in the AAA, as we call them, which is, of course, a little nudge to the banking system, its validation system, the accelerator, the activist, and the ancestor. You can tell. So I think answering the last question, and maybe we have to pick up on a few of these examples to make it palpable for the audience or for the article that we have images, obviously, is that the response was that people were in fact shocked that there was already so much done. Of course, Greta Thunberg is now our Joan of Arc, but so many others have been paving the way for this conversation. And one of my most inspiring but also cynical awarenesses is that it was Carter who put solar panels on the White House when he came to office. And when Reagan set foot, immediately had them removed and then introduced the rhetoric of green growth. Well, there you have it. It's the rhetoric we're still living in the current model. I'm not sure if I answered all your questions, Robin, but if feel free to throw one in again.
Yeah, Saskia, no, you've gone above and beyond that. I think probably with the time that we have, so I would dig a little bit deeper, both Manila as well as myself. This is a chance to have a short conversation, a timeout, a break during our daily lives, our busy lives, to think about time and temporality. And you've already given a lot to think about. I find it also really interesting that the depth of the work that was built on the lives of many giants as well as regular citizens, you guys have picked up on that. And this was definitely clear at the exhibit. I remember walking through the various rooms and just completely being awestruck by the various types of material, media, the texts, the content, the insights, even the machettes, so the smaller types of models, and how creative and diverse they were. One particular one, I think, was dealing with flooding, and it was interactive in that you could actually plug it in and fill it up with water to visualize, to some extent project, as was intended perhaps, or is a motivation behind some of the thinking and theories from Derek Lorbach. But what I find also very interesting is that you've given us through the exhibit as well as participants tangible strategies behind the accelerator, the ancestor, as well as the activist, to think about how change, constructive change for a more sustainable future, is actually within our hands. But it's probably a rather individual choice that, of course, you know, is guided and steered to some extent by the policies that we're dealt with, trends, the zeitgeist that we're living in the moment. But it does come down to us as individuals making choices about how we act, how we commit to these actions, how we interact with others, and how we truly walk that talk and provide that sense of agency, not as just a rhetoric, as Reagan did following Carter, but as a true and committed act for the future. So I think maybe what I'd like to do is dig into some of your more personal type of reflections on that experience coming out of that. I think Manila, she actually has the last question that we wanted to dig into in terms of you as a person and how you experienced that. Manila, do you want to take it away?
Yes. Thank you, Saskia. Very, very interesting. Wow. I could listen to you for all day. Thank you.
Grazie.
Prego. So, my question is, how did this experience of the Biennale change your relationship to time and speed? I mean, you embody several different intersecting perspectives because you are a woman, you are a designer, you are a researcher, an educator. And these perspectives are, of course, they can amplify your vision, but they sometimes can also be conflicting. So can you tell us a little bit more? How did this experience touch you?
I'm interested by the word conflicting. Maybe I'm just a very non-linear person by default. It's an interesting question. Well, first of all, I want to emphasize this was truly teamwork. I would say that maybe that what I feel very much attached to, for instance, that the exhibition was in a former gas holder. This is the kind of thinking very core to my practice, that things have to somehow be just, and to be in a ruin of a former container of a fossil material felt like a right way. And everything that was in the exhibition was connected to the land, and everything was borrowed. So the sand, the roosters and the walls and everything was borrowed and temporarily we took that out of their material infrastructure. So that actually we embodied the way of thinking, the way going forward in the exhibition, hopefully. But returning to your question, Manila, I would say that I draw the most inspiration from being around young people. As I already mentioned, I'm now co-heading the department with Patricia Reed, a theoretician from Berlin, where I would say conversations on cosmologies, on ecology, so both the body as an ecology, right? I mean, we are a whole vat, for lack of a better word, of different gut flora, and you know, there's so much information on the relationship of the human and the more than human, not even around us, but also in us. So these kind of thinking, how we situate ourselves, not above the world, but in it, has been very influential for my work. In the Dutch context, and globally, I would say, but particularly in the Dutch context, we see a fragmented landscape of architecture. Now, architecture, we know, is slow, to stick into the semantics of speed and time. But we also see a fragmented landscape because there's no new narrative introduced at the moment. So everything went to the markets, but even now the market is searching for what are the ways forward, which is a very interesting time to, in fact, reintroduce beyond the rhetoric of nostalgia, how architecture can be and play a role in future visualizations or visualizing a future that is desirable. So that's the theme of the next biennial is hope, because we need to underpin constructions of hope in order for all of us to not start blaming each other for the planetary disbalance that we're currently living. And it's going to get worse. And of course, we talk about all of this as a planetary disaster, but it will become a humanitarian disaster. It is actually already, I shouldn't say becoming. So returning to your question, I think what I try to bring into the discipline are questions related to the consequences of the material cultures that we in architecture is climate, right? I mean, it is material. It is also immaterial. So where are the strategies that we should reflect upon? These material cultures are often rooted in deep colonial histories. So that asks of us to rewrite those histories. You mentioned me being a woman. Yes, it's a very active conversation at the moment, the role of all different identities and how we represent it and how we can debunk one way of looking at history. It also asks for a different language nearly, right? The fact that we had the word ozone layer, hole in the ozone layer, literally we could visualize it. That was the beginning. That was the turning point for legislation to come in, for people to change. And my inspiration, I just draw from, without sounding too exotic, I didn't grow up in the Netherlands. I grew up in Africa, in Baghdad later on. And I bring that, it has come to my attention very late. I'm in my early 50s now, that this has really manifested in myself. Being white and being Western is not the only way to go. I'm preaching to the already converted, but I do believe that the architectures that we produce can facilitate that conversation and can facilitate the male, female, or those who define different conversations, the public space. Who's talking about public domain anymore? I mean, so there's a lot of questions we can pick up, and I look forward to be part of that conversation that spans from the politics of design, from the temporality. So returning to your initial question, I believe that each architect, designer, urban planner has to maybe question where they relate. And obviously we are not sometimes an activist, sometimes I'm an accelerator, right? But how do we weave these different temporalities, these different design attitudes, both material and material, into our practice? And then these topics that we've been talking about will come as a second nature. And maybe listen a bit more instead of answering questions, but I try to do to the best of my abilities.
Thank you, Saskia.
Yes, indeed, Saskia. Thank you so much for giving us much food for thought to listen to today, and also some insight moving into practice, how we can rethink and reconstruct and reorient and perhaps reposition ourselves. Because I do think that over time, as you pointed out, this meshing of different types of roles or mentalities and attitudes we might have to take on, it's not purely ancestor activists or accelerator. It could be a mix of both. It can flux over time as well. And so how we do consider and contemplate that balance of these types of positionalities or attitudes is something that we have to be very aware of and reflect on constantly. So
exactly. Yeah, maybe if I can very briefly touch on that. It also, I mentioned the semantics, but I think it also demands a different knowledge system. We have to acknowledge that our cultures and our knowledge systems are also quite problematic in a way, right? So I say I speak from the Western perspective. Like I try to liberate myself from that, but it poses questions to the locality. And we see, for instance, you mentioned being from Canadian descent, we see in that the US and the Canadian rhetoric is much further than the Western, trying to understand what does it mean, this locality, how to reappreciate the knowledges that are embedded there, that we embody differently without becoming sort of nostalgic, right? So there's a sort of very interesting new balancing act going on how to be maybe planetary open by heart, but locally rooted. I don't know. And what does that mean for cultural institutes, for being designers, I find it a very challenging moment in time. And I've never thought that we, for instance, are now starting a carbon college, literally as a cultural institute, going into workshops on how to understand CO2 in your designer practice. I don't want to start another conversation because you know when to close, but just to say that it also poses questions to all of us.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for these insights in terms of more of the psychological and theoretical realm of how we can rethink, reinvigorate our actions, our interactions. Yeah, I highly encourage that the listeners or the future listeners who will take a bit of a time out just to listen to our conversation today, we'll take the chance to go and visit the next exhibit that has a much more hopeful type of stance and positioning in Rotterdam. Thank you again, Saskia van Stein, for your time today, for your thoughts for this edition of Time Out.
Pleasure. Thank you, Robin. Thank you, Manila.
Saskia van Stein is a curator, educator, moderator, and currently appointed director for the International Architecture Biennale Rotterdam. Well, everyone, that's it for today.
We hope you enjoyed the episode we prepared for you and that you take your time to think about time.
Time Out at What Next is produced and brought to you by myself, Robin Cheng, and Manila Deulis, with the support from the Chair of Planning Theory and Urban Development. If you liked today's episode, then please consider sharing it with others in your circle. We also welcome any questions or comments we might have inspired, as well as suggestions for future episodes. Until next time,